unto Pharaoh, I shall send you.
Me? Who am I to lead these people? They'll never believe me. They won't even listen.
I shall teach you what to say.
Let my people go!
But I was their enemy. I was the prince of Egypt, the son of the man who slaughtered their children. You've chosen the wrong messenger.
The Hebrew people are enslaved in Egypt until a man named Moses sets them free. This week, we talk about God's Brooklyn accent, the rules of the killing the firstborn plague, and Charlton Heston doing mixed martial arts. We also discuss our plans for digital satyrs before we find out if the Prince of Egypt stands the test of time.
James and Alan have their say. Do the movies you love still hold up today? James says Gladiator with a glutton. Alan says as a father, blah blah. It's the test of time. James and Alan have their say. Do the movies you love still hold up today? Test of time. James and Alan have their say. Do the movies you love still hold up today?
Hello, everyone, and welcome to our second of our quarantined Test of Time podcasts. I'm James Brief, recording live from Manhattan, New York, and with me live from Long Island, New York, is my podcast partner, Alan Noah.
Don't tell everyone where I live. They have no idea. I could be anywhere. I mean, I guess I could still be anywhere on Long Island, so, yeah, all right, good enough. How you doing there, James?
Good. You know, we're recording remotely. The last time I saw you was when we recorded the Care Bears movie. That is the last time we got to hang out. Did we beat Super Mario World that time?
No, I think that might have been the time before that when we finally beat Super Mario World, which we were replaying over the past, I don't know, year, give or take?
Yeah, I'd say like at least 50 episodes or so. Yeah, a good year or so.
It took us a painfully long time to beat it, but we did. We did manage to check that box. So, yeah, you know, when this is all over, we'll find a new game to beat.
Yep. Can we play Super Nintendo games over Switch?
You mean together?
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
I don't think we can, but we'll figure out something. Speaking of, figuring this whole world out, you know, we're doing the Prince of Egypt today. What are you going to be doing for the holidays? Is your family getting together?
Well, I mean, we're talking about doing it sort of like how you and I are recording this, you know, over Skype or Zoom or Google Hangouts or something. You know, that's not ideal. It's always nice seeing family and getting together. And that's the fun thing of the Passover Seder. And I love hiding the Afikoman, and my kids and like the cousins all go looking for it. And it's not going to be like that this year. And it'll be good to see everyone on screens if that's what we have to do. But yeah, I mean, definitely not quite the same. My mom sent me a meme that said, "Biblical irony, Passover Seder may be delayed by a plague this year," which is maybe a little morbid humor. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely going to feel like a weird Passover to just kind of, you know, have a screen set up and not have 42 different desserts that everyone brings, you know? Is that what you're planning as well?
Yeah, some kind of Zoom thing. But picking out something that you said, even watching this film depicts the 10 plagues over the Egyptians, and one of the plagues is boils. Have you ever heard of something called the Bader-Meinhof phenomenon?
No.
So the Bader-Meinhof phenomenon is this thing where you suddenly start noticing things and then it crops up everywhere. Like, I remember after September 11th, for months I kept noticing whenever it was 9:11 p.m. or a.m. But the thing is, you're not actually noticing these things more. It's just that you look at your clock, like, you know, 50 times a day, and you're noticing it now more in your subconscious. Like, even when I'm seeing things, you know, just hearing things going viral and seeing the pestilence in the Prince of Egypt, or, you know, other things on Netflix like pandemic documentary, like pandemic's a little more on the nose, but just even passing instances of people having flus and all this stuff, hey, I'm just picking up on it a lot more. I don't know if you are.
I don't know that I've noticed that like right now, but I mean, definitely I know what you're talking about. Like when Courtney was first pregnant, walking around Manhattan, I would just notice a lot more people with pregnant bellies, not because they weren't there before, but just because I was more attuned to seeing them. I will just say about Passover though, I was trying to get my favorite Passover snack online, like through Amazon. I wonder if you like them, because I feel like some people love them and some people hate them. Those raspberry gel rings, you know what I'm talking about?
I totally know what you're talking about. And I thought you were going to say the one that I like, but yeah, the one you're talking about is disgusting. The one that I like is those, the fake fruit slices. They're sort of like jelly fruit. Everyone has a disgusting Passover one.
What? Those are disgusting.
Can we both agree that the most disgusting Passover dessert is macaroons?
No, I like good macaroons.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Oh, and by the way, I have this big bag of mini candy bars that I got at Costco a long time ago. And it has, you know, Three Musketeers and Kit Kats and all delicious candies. But it has one disgusting candy that I'm telling you, Al, I have an entire surplus of them next time I see you. It's a whole surplus of Almond Joys.
Yeah, but what are the disgusting candies? Because Almond Joys are amazing and everyone knows that.
Yeah, yeah, they are totally disgusting. But actually, since you do like disgusting Almond Joys, what if you don't feel like having an almond at the time, but you do still feel like disgusting chocolate and coconut?
Well, then there's Mounds, because sometimes you feel like a, but sometimes you...
Ah, yes, yes, yes.
And if that sounded like a bad edit, then that just means you don't remember that commercial from the 80s. But anyway, just to finish up the thing about the raspberry gels, I was able to buy a couple of them online. So I'm very happy that I will have those for Passover. So it will at least feel like Passover in that regard.
My mother had bought like 10 pounds of brisket in anticipation for this. And obviously she's not going to be cooking it for herself and my dad. So what she's going to be doing is she's going to be cooking all 10 pounds. She's going to be putting like care packages in the garage. And then each of the siblings is going to be coming at a different time. And we're going to pick up our little care packages. So this is obviously for people that are close by, but it's something that would be safe enough to do.
That's really sweet. Your mom is the best. Hi, Dr. Brief.
Well, Dr. Brief, I'm sure is happy about that.
Yeah. All right. So let's go from that conversation of our Passovers in 2020 to the story of, I guess, the first Passover, or, you know, the thing that we celebrate at Passover, which is the biblical story of Exodus. And I think when most people think about that in movie form, they think of the Ten Commandments. You had suggested that we do The Prince of Egypt for a movie around Passover, and I like that idea because I kind of just didn't want to watch The Ten Commandments because that's like almost 4 hours long, isn't it? It's like crazy long.
It's one of those films I definitely remember was a double VHS tape. I totally remember that.
For sure. Yeah, I mean, it's like a time commitment. And, you know, to be fair, it's a long story in the Bible. It's a big, meaty tale. And certainly in The Prince of Egypt, they gloss over a lot of details. But why don't we start off by just explaining the movie and what happens in The Prince of Egypt?
Yeah, The Prince of Egypt, it's an animated retelling of the biblical story of Exodus, like you said. And in this depiction, Ramses, he's the heir to the throne of Egypt, and he and his adopted brother Moses, they love getting in trouble. When Moses discovers that he's actually the son of a Jewish slave, he leaves Egypt, where he has a vision from God to embark on a quest to free his people from slavery. Moses returns to Egypt, but his plea is denied by Ramses, who is now the pharaoh. After 10 plagues strike Egypt, Moses leads the slaves to freedom by parting the Red Sea, drowning the Egyptian army, and delivering the Ten Commandments to the Israelites.
Yeah, it's basically what you remember from Hebrew school, Sunday school, or any other school where you learned about the Bible, except with a little bit more animated mischief.
I remember I told my parents, I'm like, oh, yeah, I watched the Prince of Egypt two nights ago. And my mom was like, oh, that Disney film. And I was like, no, it's not Disney. It was DreamWorks. And it looks very much like the Disney films of the time because this was produced by Jeffrey Katzenberg. I've said this before, but DreamWorks is DreamWorks SKG. It's founded by Steven Spielberg, Jeffrey Katzenberg, and David Geffen to make the movie, TV, and music empire. And this film, The Prince of Egypt, this was the huge release. I mean, this was their film for the Oscars. This was their declaration to the world that we are a film studio, not just another movie production company. And you could tell that the directors took this very seriously. At the same time this film is being made, Shrek is being made downstairs at DreamWorks, which they didn't actually have much faith in, and which wound up making the studio billions. But this film was, you know, their period piece. And when it came out in December of 1998, everything was riding on this.
I certainly don't remember it being like a big deal. I mean, at least in my life, I mean, we were in college then. So an animated movie about stuff I learned in Hebrew school didn't really have much appeal to me. I'm going to assume that Shrek made a ton more money. Was this kind of like a flop?
No, the film actually did quite well. It had a $70 million budget, which is huge for an animated film at the time. And it opened at number two with $14.7 million. You know, there was this whole Jeffrey Katzenberg left Disney after he made Beauty and the Beast and Little Mermaid, Lion King and Aladdin. And you remember that A Bug's Life and Ants came out? And
yeah.
There was Armageddon and Deep Impact. Like, there was a lot of DreamWorks stuff. And all of these things were leftovers from Katzenberg still having those ideas. And ironically, in the top 10 that weekend, both Ants and The Bug's Life were there. So DreamWorks is really, really having a round at Disney here. On a $70 million budget, it wound up making $101 million domestically and $220 million worldwide. So, you know, a big hit. You know, it's not the kind of film you can really have a sequel to. They did kind of have a direct-to-DVD, another film with the same animated style called Joseph, King of Dreams or something. But
yeah.
But they never released another biblical one. They went more like The Road to El Dorado and those kind of films.
Right, right. There's only a handful of stories from the Bible, I guess, that you could really make into entertaining movies, unless you're like, you know, doing one of those direct-to-video Christian stories kind of a thing, which I guess they do.
Or if you want to go rated R Game of Thrones style, there's some really, really NC-17 stuff in some of the books, like violent war stuff and sex stuff. It's really, really graphic. They could make a very interesting HBO series one day, but that's not this story, certainly. You know, this story, they went out of the way to make sure this was very, very respectful to the source material. There's this opening disclaimer.
I just pulled it up. It says, while artistic and historical license has been taken, we believe that this film is true to the essence, values, and integrity of a story that is a cornerstone of faith for millions of people worldwide. The biblical story of Moses can be found in the book of Exodus. The way I interpreted that little disclaimer was, hey, here's our version. If you don't like it, go read the Bible.
I thought it was definite that they were trying to be very, very careful. And I thought kind of respectful of everyone. This film was also done to be as wide as possible. The soundtrack, this is a 100-piece orchestra kind of soundtrack. And there were actually three soundtracks to this film.
Really?
Yeah. There was the actual soundtrack, you know, all the songs that we have on here, just like any Disney one. There was just the score. Did you notice who the composer was?
Yeah, Hans Zimmer.
Yeah. And then there was a third soundtrack. Interesting. It was called Nashville, which was country songs inspired by the movie The Prince of Egypt.
Really?
Yeah, it was very weird. I never heard of anything like that. But this film opens, you can definitely tell this is a person who was heavily involved in early 1990s Disney films, because like any of those films, and even today, like Frozen, this opens on a big, like a Broadway musical number. And the song here is called Deliver Us. It sets a story of the slaves in Egypt, and they're, you know, obviously being abused. And we see that a mother is frantically running, and she drops her baby in a basket into the Nile River.
Yeah, and a lot of horrible things are in the Nile River. I mean, there's like alligators and hippos that are trying to eat this baby, and then like it almost gets pulled up by like these fishermen, and then some other boats almost run over this basket. And it really seems like the Nile is a real hotbed of activity, which immediately makes you think that like, okay, this woman was trying to save her baby and she didn't have a lot of options, obviously, but this was a really terrible choice, just putting it in this little basket and then sending it down this river with like hungry alligators and hippos and being like, good luck, baby.
Yeah, I mean, it's nothing outrageously impossible, but it's the kind of thing that if one were a religious person, they would say this baby was definitely guided into the queen's arms, or the pharaoh's wife's arms.
Right, and the pharaoh's wife takes the baby, who we know is Moses. She adopts him as her son, and he is a brother to Ramses, who is the pharaoh's biological son. In the Bible, Ramses is Moses' uncle. They're not brothers. And then, you know, they very quickly go from babies, little kids, to, I guess, like teenagers, young adults-ish.
Yeah.
And they're like rambunctious, and they go on like a chariot race through Egypt, and they're like having fun. All I could think of watching that scene was that it just reminded me of like a Mario Kart game, like Mario Kart in Egypt.
I love the liberties that they took here, because we know nothing about Moses when he's 18 years old. And there's absolutely nothing that says that these two people couldn't have been friends. And in the Ten Commandments, Ramses is just a total villain and evil. And this Ramses, there's sympathy. He's the son that's yelled at. And I wouldn't use the word rambunctious. These two kids are basically like rich princes, you know, from wherever, thinking we can do whatever the hell we want. They're literally doing chariots like through construction sites, destroying them. They think it's hysterical. It is funny, but what they did would have gotten any other person executed. And they're more like, Moses. And then Ramses gets yelled at even more by the father, because the father is being the authoritarian, saying, you know, Moses, you're just an obnoxious prince. But Ramses, he has to inherit Egypt. He's going to have to run the country. And Ramses says, I bear the weight of my father's crown. You know, he's the next in line.
Exactly. It's like why there's so much pressure on Kim Kardashian, but, you know, Kourtney and Khloe can do whatever they want. I don't know if that's accurate or not. I just actually had to Google Kim Kardashian sisters to make that stupid joke.
You did not have to Google who Kim Kardashian... What do you mean you have to Google?
I forget their names.
Oh, okay. Well, you knew they started with a K.
Yes, I did know that. But that's really about all I know about the Kardashians.
And, you know, another part that they take a liberty with is that they introduced Sipora here, who is this woman who is basically sex trafficked into Egypt. And, you know, I've actually always wondered, like, what did people do at night for entertainment, or even in the daytime? What did they do for entertainment? And they give you some idea that they do magic shows and music, but here they seem to have had like a belly dancer, exotic woman, and they basically give this woman to Moses. And I don't think he was given to her to, you know, to be a board game partner. That's how I read it this time. Certainly, I didn't see it that way the first time I saw this movie.
I think you're absolutely right there. I mean, there's definitely a lot of things in this movie that are implied without being overtly stated, because it is ostensibly a kid's movie. But yeah, I think that's totally accurate. And yeah, this woman hates Moses and wants nothing to do with him, because of course she would. And she escapes, and Moses could stop her, but he doesn't. He lets her go, and then he kind of just follows her as she's escaping. And there he bumps into his biological brother and sister, Aaron and Miriam. And Miriam is trying to tell Moses about who he really is and the fact that he's a Jew and, you know, he was adopted by the Pharaoh. He shouldn't really be the prince of Egypt. He doesn't believe it, but he runs home. He has this nightmare. There's a song here. What's the name of this song? I think it's All I Ever Wanted. And it's got some pretty terrible lyrics. I realize I did this when we just did the Care Bears movie, but some of the lyrics are, here among my trappings and belongings, I belong. And I'm like, well, among your belongings, you belong? That's not great lyrics right there.
It's one of the weaker songs, but that song is followed by this unbelievable animated sequence and I think a very powerful Hans Zimmer score, which is this really weird, I'd almost call it like 2.5D. It's not quite 2D. It's a little 3D, almost like a Paper Mario if you've played those kind of games. It's this brilliant animation where it's animated in the style of the Egyptian hieroglyphics. And this basically tells the story, basically talking about this genocidal night where the Egyptians went into every single home and ripped the babies out of the mother's arms and just threw them into the Nile to drown and for crocodile food. And we also see Miriam and her mother carrying Moses. It's a brilliant piece of animation. It's hard to describe it over podcast, but this is a really cool scene animated-wise.
Yes, it's definitely interesting visually because it kind of breaks with the style of the rest of the movie. And Moses is having this as sort of like a nightmare slash vision come to life. He confronts his adopted mother and she confirms, yes, this is what happened. You are not my biological son, but you are my son and I love you. And he's asking about all of these babies that were killed. And her answer is, well, they were only slaves, which is the way that all horrible things in history have been excused of, oh, those people aren't real people, so that means what we did was okay. And Moses is really affected by this. The next day he's out, he sees a taskmaster whipping a Hebrew slave, and he pushes the taskmaster and kills him. In the Bible, I remember that is an intentional murder. He kills the taskmaster on purpose, but in this movie, it's sort of made as more of like a, oops, he just meant to push him, and then the guy died.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, I think in the Ten Commandments, like Charlton Heston just kind of chokes him to death, and I think he does one of those MMA chokeholds, if I remember correctly, and just like kind of either breaks his neck kind of thing.
Charlton Heston doing MMA. Love it.
Yeah, yeah. You're right. It's depicted very differently here. I mean, he definitely wants to push the taskmaster out of the way from whipping the guy, but they're on the top of this rickety scaffolding, and, you know, it's like ancient Egyptian scaffolding. So the guy falls off, and, it's kind of one of those oops, but I always kind of thought it was more interesting that Moses just killed the guy. But Ramses is like, whatever, you know, it's you, Moses. And there really is this emotional thing where Moses, like, needs to leave. And Ramses is like, Moses, please. It's really begging his best friend, the brother that he loves. And, you know, Ramses, for all we know, Ramses has thought of Moses as his biological brother. We don't know if Ramses knows the story yet. He probably does eventually. But I thought it was very well done.
Yeah, it's a touching scene. It's supposed to make you feel for Ramses, but Moses has to leave. He goes, wanders the desert. He ends up in a town where he is reunited with the woman who is brought before him as a gift earlier, Tzipora, and he meets her father, Jethro, and this whole village. He and Tzipora settle down, get married. I think in the Bible he has kids, right? They don't have kids in this movie.
Yeah, they definitely have kids. But no, they don't mention it either way in this film.
Right. But then is the big moment where Moses encounters the burning bush, which is the voice of God, who tells him he needs to go back to Egypt and rescue the Hebrews. I couldn't help but thinking, when you first see that burning bush, I was like, that's not a burning bush. That's a burning shrub. It's like really small. And then the fire grows and it encompasses the whole screen and it becomes this like purple kind of fire. It definitely builds. But at first I was like, this is pretty underwhelming.
It definitely starts with he's like, WTF is this? And then he starts hearing the voice. You're right. And then it gets much bigger. And the voice of God. Yeah, we'll talk about the voice acting later. But did you notice who the voice was? Well, I'll tell you. It's actually everyone's voice at once. Every single voice actor in the film is combined. Even though the voice of Moses is a little bit louder, that actor of Val Kilmer's voice is a little bit louder. It's everyone's voice put together.
Oh, I thought it was just Val Kilmer.
No. It was done that way to make it every race, every gender, which I guess makes sense. You know, who are you actually going to necessarily get? You know, Morgan Freeman works in some films.
Sure.
But, and yeah, eventually after he has this vision and God says, take my staff, he's a very humble guy. He's like, who am I? I'm just nobody. Although I was thinking, you do know Ramses, so you're probably better than any other slave to do it, to be honest.
Right, right. And there is a moment where he's talking to Tzipora later and he's like, well, I have to go. And she's like, why? And he's like, well, I know these people, so I must. And it's like, yeah. And also because God told you to. So when God tells you to do something, you should pretty much do it. I mean, that's sort of like a recurring theme in the Bible from what I remember in my Hebrew school days.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely, I'd go with God number one. And I promise this guy I'd come back.
Yeah. Right, right.
So he does return to Egypt. And in the beginning of the film, Moses has this hair. If you imagine the classic Cleopatra hair, Moses has that hair for the first like act of the film. And then he takes it off when he's in the desert and kind of abandons all of his Egyptian wear and all of his jewelry. And it's a wig. And I thought that was great. I thought that was kind of funny.
It is funny. My kids got a kick out of Ramsay's sort of like side ponytail thing. I don't know if that's like an actual thing that Egyptian princes wore, but my daughter thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, and they had those badass goatees, you know, that's it depicted on, you know, King Tut's sarcophagus, and the elder pharaoh has that, you know, no facial hair at all, except a really long beard coming just out of the tip of his chin. It's pretty badass.
Yeah, I kind of wish I could grow a beard like that. So Moses goes back to Egypt, and he demands that Ramses let my people go, and Ramses is like, hey, brother, it's you. What are you talking about, your people? Like, come on, let's like hang out. And Moses is like, no, I'm really serious about the whole freeing all the slaves thing. By God commanded it. And Ramses is like, I've never heard of that God, because the Egyptians had many gods. And, you know, the one God of the Jews, of the Hebrews, is like this foreign concept to him. And Moses takes the rod that he has and he turns it into a snake, or God turns it into a snake. And then these two magicians who work for the Pharaoh do all of these other sort of magic tricks. And there's another song, You're Playing with the Big Boys Now. I like this song probably the best out of all the different songs in this movie. It's an excuse for them to sort of do more animation tricks and show some more cool visuals as these two mystics perform other incredible acts.
It's very Disney-like in that the songs are sung by different people that are the voice actors, except for this song. No, actually, that's not true. Sandra Bullock sings a little bit of When You Believe. But this song, You're Playing with the Big Boys Now, done by those two magicians, they are the same voice actors that do the singing. And I totally didn't recognize who it was. But once I saw the credits, I was like, oh, of course. And it makes perfect sense why they were doing the Broadway number. I mean, did you pick up on who these guys were?
I didn't at first. And then when I was watching the credits, I was like, oh, of course, it's Steve Martin and Martin Short, who are hilarious on their own. They're hilarious together. I don't remember if I mentioned this on the podcast before, but I saw them live last year. They did like a live show, the two of them. It was also a Netflix special, but went to see them live, and they're just amazing.
Yeah, I think it's called An Evening You Will Soon Forget or something like that. I think that's what their special is called on Netflix.
Something like that. An Evening You Will Never Remember or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a great song, And from there, we go into Moses accepting that he's playing with the big boys. And that's where you have the 10 plagues, which the movie really only spends time with the first of the 10 plagues, which is when the water turns to blood. And then it sort of does kind of like a montage of the other next 8. It makes a big deal out of the last one. It kind of makes sense for them to do the 10 plagues in succession because, again, as I recall from the Bible way back when, I'm not that religious. I don't read it that often. But I think the story is that like Moses does a plague and the Pharaoh's like, oh, man, that was bad, but I'm still not going to let him go. And then he does another plague and the Pharaoh's like, I'm still not going to let your people go. And that happens over and over and over again. So to keep the story moving, it sort of works as a montage.
Yeah, and they do have that reaction by Ramses kind of going, humph, kind of seems like, why don't you just kill him? But I assume he can't kill Moses for whatever reason. But I think it's done in a montage for a very good reason. I don't even remember how they did in the Ten Commandments. I don't remember them doing all 10 of them. And certainly they couldn't do locusts and that kind of stuff.
I'm not really sure. I don't remember. I haven't seen that movie in a long time.
One thing with the 10 plagues that there's definitely darkness, but this one seemed like they were like asteroids raining down on Cairo. It was like pretty terrifying, but I don't really remember that plague, but it was pretty cool.
Hail. I think that was supposed to be hail.
Oh, that's the hail. Okay. All right. But these were like fiery hail. Okay. That's what that was. Okay. But these were like pyramid sized pieces of hail.
Yes. They were very, very serious pieces of hail. And then the last one is the slaying of the firstborn. And that's where the word Passover comes from, because God goes through the land of Egypt and smites all of the firstborn Egyptians. But the Jews put the blood of a lamb on their doorstep, and then God passes over those houses, sparing the Jews and killing all of the Egyptian firstborn sons.
And the lambs.
Well, yes, and the lambs. I did sort of wonder, like, what's the age limit on that? Because God doesn't kill Ramses himself. He does kill Ramses' son, but Ramses is an adult who is also the firstborn son. So is it like only firstborn sons 18 and under? Or like, did he just spare Ramses because he's the king? Or like, how exactly does that work? What are the rules on that?
Yeah, what if there's one of these situations where the wife is like, they hear all the firstborns are dying. She's holding the baby. She's like, no, I don't want him to die. He doesn't die. And then the father has to be like, yeah, I kind of had another kid with someone else. Never told you, but good news, honey. Our little boy's alive. Yay.
Boy, I'm going to have an awkward conversation with my mistress tomorrow.
Exactly. Are there like 70-year-olds that are dropping dead because they're technically the firstborn of their mothers and stuff? Yeah, it's not made clear, but the angel of death scene was really well done. And as they're doing this, you know, they probably had half a dozen totally different ideas on what to do for the angel of death. Do you make it an actual like ghost that goes through? Is it going to be like an actual humanoid? Is it going to be just an invisible thing? And what they went with is they went kind of with a spirit that goes through the fields and the houses, and it's pretty dark. They show the kids dying.
Yeah, there's one shot of like a kid walks into like a room and he's holding a bowl, and then you hear the bowl break, and then you see like the hand like flop out of the doorway. It's pretty disturbing. I'm not really clear on if it's God or an angel of death. I don't think they say in this movie. I feel like there's one part of like the Haggadah when you're telling the story at the Passover Seder where it says like, I myself am not an angel of death, implying that it's God. But that's neither here nor there. It has the desired effect on Ramses as he mourns the death of his son. He casts Moses and all of the Jews out. Part of the Passover story is that because the Jews were in such a hurry, their bread didn't have time to rise, which is why we eat matzah. You know, those are those flat crackers, if you're not familiar with matzah, that Jews eat at Passover. They don't address that in the movie at all, which I guess is fine.
during the whole Exodus and them walking out of Egypt and until they get to the Red Sea, there is basically the song. It's the big single. It was When You Believe. And in this film, it's sung by regular singers. And I think Sandra Bullock does sing part of it. But the single, do you remember who the single was sung by?
No, I don't remember.
It's actually a duet. Money is no object. And you have to pick the most popular and talented by Grammys and all that stuff. Who would you pick? They're two incredibly popular women. I'll give you a hint. They're not older women. So it's not Aretha Franklin. You know, they didn't get someone like classic. They got in the 90s. These people were peaking.
Mariah Carey.
Correct.
I don't know. Like a Britney Spears, Christina Aguilera type person.
No. You're too early for that. Cause this is before, I think they're like 99, but, this woman is dead.
Whitney Houston?
Yes, Whitney Houston. So it's Whitney Houston and Mariah Carey. If you listen to the song and it's over the credits, they're both like out divaing each other because they each sing their own verse and then it comes together at the end, both of them. And it's like, when you believe, 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 believe. And they're both trying to like do a higher note than the other. It's actually pretty funny.
I just want this podcast to be in the future. You out diva-ing yourself.
Yes.
But the Jews go all the way to the Red Sea. They make it, but then Ramses has a change of heart. Somehow he manages to make up all that lost ground and shows up as the Jews are at the bank of the Red Sea. And if you remember your religious school, Moses uses his rod to part the Red Sea. There is a line in the movie where the voice of God says, with this staff, you shall do my wonders. It's like not wonders. It's like one does. It's almost like a Brooklyn accent that God has at that one word. I was like, wait, why is God talking like that?
I totally did not pick up on that. And I thought that line was like wonderfully done, wonderfully done, I guess. But the way you say it, it is fantastic.
Hey, use my rod and part that Red Sea there.
You can play stickball with it. Or you can part the Red Sea. Or you can part the East River. I don't care.
Yeah, forget about it. It's the Red Sea. What are you going to do?
Yeah, but he parts it, and the Egyptians who are behind this wall of fire, and they can't get to the Hebrews. So actually, it's Aaron who first has the faith, I guess, to go through this totally terrifying parted sea. This is not like a little pond. It looks like it's taking them probably hours to walk through this thing. It's probably a couple miles. They've got carriages and all this stuff. And there is one shot that I absolutely love. And there's a little flash of the water, and you can see that there's a whale like floating up to the like wall of water. I think it's a really beautiful shot.
That couldn't possibly live in the Red Sea. Right?
With your marine biology degree, I guess you can make that decision, right, Al? Oh, wait, you don't have a marine biology degree.
You don't know what I do in my spare time.
I will say, you know that series Tintin that I like?
Yes, that you are the only person in the United States of America that likes.
Correct, but the entire world likes. There is a book, one of his adventures is called The Red Sea Sharks. So there's definitely sharks in the Red Sea. And killer whales. It could be a killer whale.
I read somewhere that it was a whale shark. I'm like, do those live in the Red Sea? I don't know. Maybe they do. I was just like, is that there? I don't know.
Yeah. As the slaves are almost through the Red Sea, this wall of fire that God had been using to hold the Egyptians back is gone. So the Egyptians have like one more chance. Like, we've given you 10 chances already to let them go. Here's an 11th chance. And the moment the fire is gone, Ramses just pulls out a sword and yells, charge! And the king, Ramses, rides with his soldiers. You know, he's not commanding his soldiers to go. So Ramses rides into the Red Sea with them, but his chariot like hits a stone and he's kind of left behind. But as the Egyptians are catching up on them, once the last Hebrew is safe, the parted Red Sea is now, it collapses on itself and all the Egyptians are killed. Ramses is spared. He's kind of like washed out of the sea to kind of wallow in his defeat. But yeah, it's a very sad scene all around.
In the Bible, doesn't Ramses die?
I don't remember. I don't know if he does. But I do know that you're always supposed to not like celebrate that. And it's kind of like, wow, a lot of people died here. I think it's done well there. That they are happy that they're free, but they're not like cheering that everyone's dead. I think that's purposely done there for that reason.
Yes, totally. And there is a Jewish tradition during the Passover Seder where during all of the plagues, you sort of like dip your finger in the wine and spill out a little bit, which I believe is done for that same reason, where it's like, you know, God had to perform these miracles to get the Jews out of Egypt. And it's a wonderful thing. And you're celebrating that in the story. But you're also sad about all those people who had the horrible boils or were killed by, you know, those huge giant pieces of hail. That tradition of spilling the wine is to commemorate the sadness of the other innocent lives that were lost. And yeah, you don't celebrate that all of these Egyptians died. But the movie sort of goes from that moment, basically skips over the whole wandering the desert for 40 years and just skips ahead to Moses coming down from Mount Sinai with the Ten Commandments. And that's where the movie ends.
Yeah, to be clear, the 40 years wandering is kind of after they get the Ten Commandments.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, they're saved by God and they're all supposed to be, oh, God is great. And then in the Bible, then Moses goes up to Mount Sinai for 40 days and is kind of getting the Ten Commandments. And the Israelites lose faith and then they make a new God out of golden calf, or half of them do. But it ends kind of on a reprise of Deliver Us, the opening song. And it ends exactly like both The Lion King and E.T. It's just a very, very powerful violins, and then boom, cut to black.
Yeah. And so now that we have come to the end of the movie, James, do you think that The Prince of Egypt stands the test of time?
You know, there's a lot of things to talk about here. One is the animation. It's two-dimensional. It's not computer, although there's definitely parts in here that are you can tell are a little computer. I think that whale shark is almost definitely a computer. And I think even the parting of the Red Sea, I think, might be computers and other parts. But based on the fact that this is one of the last grand two-dimensional films, the animation incredibly holds up because we've just never seen anything better, really. And I mean that they've never really tried to do anything better. I wouldn't compare this to a Pixar, Incredibles, Onward, you know, that they have now. I wouldn't compare, but I think in terms of the animation, it's beautiful. Hans Zimmer's score is great. The songs, they range from fine. I think you're correct. The one, All I Ever Wanted, it's a generic Les Miserables song, in my opinion. It's a generic solo musical song. It's not bad, but it's a little forgetful. I think all the other songs are really good. My favorite is probably When You Believe or Deliver Us, the openings. The one you mentioned, you're playing with the big boys now. It's a fun one, but to me, I think I like the musical, the grand one better. The voice acting, I mean, they did not spare any expense for this. Moses is Val Kilmer. Ray Fiennes is Ramses, and he's fantastic. And I think the first obvious voice was Ramses the First, or whatever his name is. That was Patrick Stewart, and you can't not recognize his voice.
Seti is his name.
Oh, yes, yes.
And then you have Jeff Goldblum as Aaron, who also just, like, you hear him speak for 3 seconds, and you're like, oh, it's Jeff Goldblum.
Right, right, right. I didn't recognize Danny Glover as Jethro, and I did not recognize Sandra Bullock as Miriam. And like I said before, I totally missed Martin Short and Steve Martin, but I think the voice acting was as good as you're going to get. I think they made a lot of smart choices in the film with the stuff that they cut out. The Golden Calf is kind of a totally different story, in my opinion. It's more the Ten Commandments. It's not more the Prince of Egypt. This was more about Moses, not about the Israelites. If you're talking about Exodus, yeah, you put that in. But yeah, to me, you know, it's another story depiction of a biblical story. It's not religious. There's an incredible amount of detail in this film, and you can tell that this was what DreamWorks really wanted to put out. I think, again, they were very surprised when the public was like, very nice, but we love Shrek. To me, it totally stands up. What do you think, Al?
Well, I agree with you about the voice actors who do a really good job, although I didn't think that Val Kilmer as Moses was that amazing, to be honest. But I agree with you that there's just a lot of talent in this cast, and it's great. I'm honestly not that into the songs. I really can't remember the tunes of any of them or any of the words. There are no like earworms for me. I literally could not hum any of these songs, and I watched the movie yesterday. So for me, they're just not that memorable. I did sort of feel like, in terms of the animation, that they really did pull out a lot of the tricks from the animation trick book. There's a lot of that thing where there's some characters and then there's like overexposed characters on top of them, and it's sort of like an overlay, and then they kind of like go in and out of focus. You mentioned that dream sequence, which is in a very different style, you know, like the burning bush. It really kind of is supposed to be like this grand effect of the fire. Some of that stuff just kind of read as like old fashioned to me, which is weird because it's, you know, late 90s. It's not that old. When you were talking about 2D animated movies, Disney did make The Princess and the Frog. I forget exactly what year that came out, but that was sometime, you know, in the 21st century. And that has some really cool 2D animation in it. I do want to point out that you suggested I watch this movie with my kids, and I was like, oh, my daughter's kind of into it. My son really isn't. And you were like, no, get him to watch it. He'll love it. And I only got him to watch it because I told him that you said he would love it.
I didn't say he'd love it. I said he's missing out if he misses it. That's exactly what I said. I didn't say he'd love it. I said he'd be missing out.
What's the difference?
Because I think it's a very easy retelling of the Passover story. That's why.
My son, like pretty much every kid I've ever seen around you, worships you. And he thinks you're the coolest guy in the world because you have all the toys and video games in your apartment and everything. And you're just a really fun, funny guy to be around. So he watched it because of your recommendation, however you want to phrase the recommendation. And he did not like it. He was bored. I kind of agree. I thought it was a little slow at parts, and part of that is just sort of the story itself. It takes place over a long time, and it's a complicated story to fit into an hour and a half movie. I really do like the way they framed it, and I really like the fact that they made it about these two brothers. And you're right, it's not really religious with a capital R. God is a supporting character in this movie. He only has like a handful of lines. It's really about the relationship between Moses and Ramses, and I do appreciate that. But overall, I just found myself not terribly entertained, and I don't really love this movie. Counterpoint is that, well, the story of Exodus definitely stands a test of time, because I'm going to retell it at my digitally held Seder next week. You know, like that story does stand the test of time, but I think the biblical version does more so than this animated one. And I'm going to say this movie does not stand the test of time.
Of course you do. Now, Al, if only I had a written record of what I said based on the fact that I told you this in GChat and not over phone. And I said, why isn't your son watching the film? Is he doing something else? And you said he was meh about it. And I said, he's missing out. I didn't say anything about him loving it. And you have misrepresented me. And I demand a retraction.
Okay. Demand noted.
Am I going to get a retraction?
You are not.
Okay. Well, then I don't know what I'm going to do about that. there is absolutely nothing I'm going to do about that.
Yeah, you really backed that up well. DreamWorks SKG Animation hasn't stood the test of time.
That's true. It is now, actually, it's split into DreamWorks Animation. And now DreamWorks is, I think, just a production company. I don't think they distribute anymore.
That sounds right. I'll take your word for that.
It's not what it was when this came out. That's true.
All right, so that's going to do it for us this week. Next week, we are coming back with a 1990s classic movie that I am really excited to watch, Office Space. This is a good one to watch while most people are not going to the office. Or maybe it's a terrible movie for that reason. Whatever, I want to watch Office Space.
Well, actually, it could be interesting because you could almost long for the days of, I wish I was in an office where the PC load letter error was giving me a lot of trouble. But no, not for now.
I actually have that movie on DVD. I'm excited to pull that off the DVD shelf and watch that one again. So in the meantime, we want to hear from you. We are at Test of Time Pod, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Write to us. Tell us how you're celebrating Passover. I hope this episode was interesting for all of our Jewish and non-Jewish listeners. We kind of geeked out about the Old Testament a little bit and our Passover traditions. But happy Passover, everybody. If you're celebrating, do it safely and with social distancing. Actually, during the Passover Seder, you wash your hands twice. So, you know, it's pretty forward thinking.
Maybe a third time.
Right. Maybe this year you should do it three times. But all right. We'll see you next time, everybody.
Bye.